This is Audible.
Mr. O. Written by Lauren Blakely. Narrated by Sebastian York. Prologue. Ask me my three favorite things, and the answers are so easy they roll off my tongue. Hitting a home run for my softball league, drawing a killer cartoon panel, and, oh yeah, making a woman come so hard she sees stars. Not gonna lie, that last one is my favorite by about a mile. Giving a woman a sheet-grabbing, toe-curling, mind-blowing orgasm is pretty much the best thing ever. A woman's climax is like summer break, Christmas morning, and a vacation in Fiji all rolled together in one fantastic package of window-shattering bliss. Hell, if we could harness the beauty and energy from women coming, we could probably power cities, stop global warming, and bring about world peace. The female orgasm is basically the manifestation of everything good in the world. Especially when I deliver them, and I've given thousands upon thousands. I'm like a superhero of pleasure, a good deed doer, the once upon a shy guy, now a stud, and my mission is to dispense as many climaxes to my lovers as possible. How have I managed to achieve this amazing feat? Simple. I'm both a student and a master of the art of giving O's. I consider myself an expert because, in the interest of full disclosure here, I'm completely, 100% obsessed with a woman's enjoyment between the sheets. Getting her off is the name of the game, and if you can't get that job done, you should get the hell out of the bedroom. But hey, I'm also humble enough to admit I'm still a learner, because there's always something new to discover with a woman. Does she want it soft, hard, fast, light, rough? Does she like it with teeth, toys, my cock, my tongue, my fingers? Does she crave a little something extra, like a feather, a vibrator, or a combination of the above? Every woman is different, and every path to her pleasure is its own erotic journey with so many fantastic stops to make along the way. I take mental notes, study her cues, and always get out and do the field work. I suppose that makes me the Magellan of the female orgasm. A true explorer, venturing forth, fearless and ready at any moment to map the terrain of her pleasure until she cries out in rapture. Fine, some might say I have an addiction, but really, is it a bad thing that I love to make the woman I'm with feel good? If that makes me a guy with a one-track mind, then I'm guilty as fucking charged. I'll freely admit that when I meet a woman I'm into, I picture in seconds what she looks like coming, how she sounds, and how I want to send her soaring. The trouble is, there's one woman I just can't go there with. Even though lately my brain desperately wants to figure out how to drive her wild. It's been an epic battle, and I've had to keep her in a special drawer, sealed and locked, the key thrown away, because she is the definition of hands off. Which sucks royally because she's about to make things even harder with the words that come out of her mouth. Chapter 1. They say men have sex on the brain 99.99% of the time. You're not going to catch me trying to dispute that. Why would I? It's pretty much dead-on accurate. Especially when you consider the remaining 0.01% of brain power is tirelessly dedicated to finding the remote. In my case, though, and I suppose in my defense, sex is part of my job. And so is schmoozing and signing autographs. Ergo, here I am at an open book, a cool bookstore on the Upper West Side. When this signing shindig started a few hours ago, a long line of fans snaked out the door. The event my network set up is almost over, so the line is winding down. The crowd has been 55 to 45 in favor of the fairer sex, which is absolutely nothing I'm going to complain about, especially since my fans were pretty much all dudes several years ago. Some still are. Like this guy.
My favorite episode is based on that one, a squeaky-voiced, messy-haired, awkward teenager says,
as he points to a panel that features Mr. Orgasm rescuing a dozen busty beauties from a remote island where they'd been deprived of sex for far too long. The upshot? Only a cartoonish caped crusader could replenish their depleted stores of pleasure, which had dwindled to terrifyingly low levels. I shudder at the thought of what those women must have gone through before the hero arrived to save the day. Yeah, that one does rock, I say, flashing the kid a quick grin and then nodding seriously. Mr. Orgasm did a great service for the ladies, didn't he? Yes, the kid says with wide, earnest eyes. He helped them so much. It's weird, because he's probably 16, and there's a part of me that thinks, why the fuck are you watching my raunchy TV show? But on the other hand, I get it. When I was his age, I didn't have a clue about girls either, which probably explains why I started drawing The Adventures of Mr. Orgasm, the once online cartoon, now late-night television sensation, which includes the storyline about the aforementioned act of good citizenship performed by the titular hero. Titular. I said titular. In my head. Anyway, that had definitely been a popular episode, and one of the reasons my network packaged up some of my old strips into this graphic novel by yours truly, Nick Hammer. Special edition and all, like the embossed gold stamp on the cover says. Can you sign it to Ray? He asks. And as I raise the black Sharpie, I catch a flash of gold out of the corner of my eye, then a hand in a pocket. Oh, shit. I think I know what the woman lined up behind Ray just did. I finish signing and hand him the book. Go forth and give pleasure, Ray, I tell him, as if it's a mantra. I knock fists with him, and he stares briefly at his hand afterward, as if he's been blessed by a master. Of course he has. You have my word. I want to be a pleasure purveyor, Ray says solemnly as he clutches the book to his chest, reciting one of Mr. Orgasm's famous lines. Man, someday that dude is going to blow the minds of the ladies. He's got some serious determination, but not yet, because, you know, he's 16. I turn my eyes to the next person in line, and I'm practically blindsided by the sheer amount of breast on display. It's pretty much enough to activate a full-on man trance, that glazed eye, struck stupid look that only tits can induce in a guy. I'm not immune to it because tits. They are one of my favorite playgrounds. But I've had some serious training in combating the condition. Part of my job is interacting with the public, and I can't just walk around slack-jawed staring at chests. This woman is going to put my skills to the test, though. She's wearing a scoop-neck white T-shirt. That's kryptonite for most men. She leans forward, making sure I get a front-row seat. I cast my eyes around, hoping Serena, the very pregnant, perennially smiling, but oh-so-savvy PR woman who works with my show at Comedy Nation, will return quickly from yet another bathroom break. She's a pro at knowing when to hold the eager ladies at bay. Look, I'm not complaining. I do not mind whatsoever that some of the show's viewers get a little frisky at events like this. It's all good. But I've got a feeling this one isn't supposed to be playing. Hey there, I say, giving a smile to bleached blonde. Interact. Engage. That's part of the job. Be the public face of the hit TV show currently crushing the motherfucking competition in the 11 p.m. time slot. And all the programs that run earlier in the night, too. That both thrills the head of the network and drives him batshit crazy, but that's a story for later. The woman brings her hand to her chest, trying a time-honored tactic to invoke the trance. I remain stoic. I'm Samantha, and I love your show so much, she coos. I read the profile of you in Men's Health the other week, too. I was so impressed with your devotion to your craft as well as your body. The profile, because it's Men's Health, featured a shot of me working out. Then, because she's not subtle, she roams her gray eyes along my ink-covered arms, over my chest, and, well, let's just call a spade a spade. She pretty much tries to mate with me via eye contact right here in the bookstore. Devotion is my middle name, I say with a smile, and push my glasses higher. She makes me edgy, and it's not the ample cleavage, but rather what she did in line a few minutes ago in her pocket. She bends closer, gliding the book across the table to me. "You can sign right here if you want," Samantha whispers, dragging her finger across her cleavage. I grab the book with quick hands. Thanks, but I found the title page is an equally excellent location. "You should leave your number on it," she adds, as I sign Nick Hammer and hand her the book. "Funny thing, I don't actually know my number," I say with a harmless shrug. "Who can remember numbers anymore, even our own?" "Where the hell is Serena? I hope she didn't give birth in the ladies' room." Samantha giggles, then drags a long candy pink nail across my signature. "Hammer," she says coyly, letting it roll around in her mouth. "Is that your real name, or is it a term of endearment about..." "No, no, no. Abort. Cannot go there. Will not play the dirty synonym game featuring my last name with Samantha, who's about to run those sharp nails down my arm." "Oh, excuse me, did you drop something?" I straighten my shoulders when I hear a familiar voice, deadpan humor and pure innocence at the same time. The blonde startles. "No," she says with a snarl, snapping at the questioner. "I didn't drop anything." "Are you sure?" The tone is of complete and utter concern. I can't help the grin that spreads across my face because I know the woman behind the voice is up to something sneaky. Harper Holliday. Red hair, blue eyes. Face of a sweet, sexy angel. Body of a badass ninja warrior princess. And a mouth adept at pitch-perfect delivery of sarcasm. I'd play dirty synonyms, dirty antonyms, dirty anything with her. Harper steps from behind the blonde in line and opens her palm. "Because I'm pretty sure this is your wedding ring," she says, a worried look in those bright blue eyes as she plucks a gold wedding band from her hand and offers it to the hungry blonde. "That's not mine," the woman says defensively, all that flirty sweetness swiped clean from her voice. Harper smacks her other hand against her forehead. "Oh, my bad. You put yours in your pocket a few minutes ago, right there." She points to the woman's right pocket, and sure enough, there's the outline of what looks to be a wedding band. That's exactly what I'd suspected she'd done in line. Stuffed it away. Probably had forgotten she was wearing it and then tried to hide it at the last minute. The married woman's face goes pale. "Busted." "This one," Harper continues, holding up the ring and letting it catch the light from the ceiling. "This is the one I keep handy for situations like this." Samantha mutters, "bitch," under her breath, turns on her heel and marches away. "Enjoy the book," Harper calls out, then looks to me, cocks her head and shoots me an "I just saved your ass" grin. In her own imitation of the Mr. Orgasm groupies, she says, "Nick Hammer, is that your real name?" Just like that, I hope Serena stays in the restroom for a lot longer. Chapter 2. My real last name is Hammer. I get asked that question all the time. Everyone thinks it's fake, like it's a stage name or pen name or my stripper name from back in the days when I worked hard for the money. Just kidding. I was never a stripper. But I was lucky enough to land a kick-ass last name, and I'm doubly lucky because if I'd been a girl, my parents were going to name me Sunshine. Instead, my mom named her bakery Sunshine and her sons Wyatt and Nick. Our little sister came a few years after the bakery was born, so she dodged the hippie name too. But Josie definitely got the vibe. She's a free spirit. I point at the ring Harper has in her hand. "Did you jet off to Vegas this weekend and marry Penn? Or wait, was it Teller?" "No. Chris Angel," she says, as she stuffs the ring inside a red purse so big it could provide safe harbor for refugees. "Seriously, though, why do you carry a wedding band around?" "I could tell you, but then I'd be breaking code 563 in the Magician's Handbook of Secrecy, which was written to keep mere mortals such as yourself in the dark." I tap my chest and shake my head. "I beg your pardon. I'm not a mere mortal. Fess up." She cups the side of her mouth and stage whispers, "It's fake. I picked it up so I could do a little sleight of hand trick at a party last weekend." "Did the trick work?" She nods, her lips curving in a grin.
"Like a charm.
Turn this into the Green Lantern's ring." The kid was in awe. "As well he should be. By the way," I say, tipping my chin in the direction of the long-gone lady, "thank you." For a second there, I was thinking maybe she had a magic bullet in her pocket. Her eyes widened.
"Has that happened?"
I nod, rolling my eyes. "Once, at a fan meet and greet."
"A fan rubbed one out in line?"
"Either that, or is just priming the pump for later. But don't worry, I'm pretty psyched that you saved me from the sneak-off-the-wedding-band tactic, too. I think you might be a superhero."
"That's me."
I swoop in out of nowhere and rescue unsuspecting men from married women with dangerous husbands who would want to crush the life force out of wildly popular cartoonists. You'll probably want to take me out for a coffee when I tell you her husband is about 10 feet tall, has arms the size of cannons, and wears brass knuckles. Saw him outside the bookstore before I came in.
"Does he lead an underground fight ring, too?"
She nods in mock seriousness.
"Yes, he's vicious. That's his fight name."
"I clearly owe you the coffee. Maybe even a slice of cake, just so you know how much I appreciate you saving me from vicious."
"Don't tease me. Cake is my religion." She lowers her voice.
"I was debating for the longest time whether to use the ring trick or to give her these," she says, dipping her hand into her bag and producing a pair of purple eyeglasses, and suggesting she wear them to help her eye fuck you better. I crack up at her choice of words. "Are they specially designed for that? If so, I'd really like to get a pair."
"To use on you."
She nods again. "There's a shop in the East Village that sells them. They need to be special ordered, but I can hook you up," she says, then roots around in her bag. "It's like Hermione's purse. Yes, I read all of Harry Potter. It's only the best story ever told." She grabs a copy of my collection from inside her bag and sets it on the table.
"Can you sign it to Helena?"
I shoot her a look when I see the receipt inside the book. She bought it here.
"Harper, you didn't have to come here for me to sign a book. I would have given you one."
She winks.
"Good to know I'm on the short list. For now, I have a client who is secretly in love with you, so I'm giving her this as a gift."
"Tell Helena Mr. Orgasm says hello," I say as I sign it. When I look up, Harper is wearing the purple glasses. I blink. Holy shit, she is red hot in them. As a guy who wears glasses, I dig a chick in glasses, and I've never even seen Harper wear them before. Not gonna lie, the sexy librarian fantasy is strong in this one. This one being me, and I'm thinking pencil skirt, tight white blouse, enticingly unbuttoned, and Harper bending over a desk, ready to be spanked for misshelving some books. She ogles me like the woman in line was doing, and whispers in a naughty tone,
"Do they work, Nick?"
"Absolutely, but you don't even need glasses for me to want to be eye-fucked by you. Also, I'm imagining what you look like in nothing but them." Wait, shit. No. I smack the 99.99% of my brain that just thought that. Because Harper is my best friend's sister, and Spencer already promised he would shave off all my hair and dye my eyebrows if I ever touched her. Not that I'm scared of Spencer. I just really like my hair. It's light brown, thick, and, well, I'm just going to be honest here. I could totally do shampoo commercials. There, I said it. But I also don't plan on acting in any of the damn fantasies I've had about Harper, even if the bent over the kitchen counter one is particularly potent lately. Though, that's not fair to the up-against-the-wall fantasy, is it? Note to self, bring the wall one back into rotation tonight. But back to her question about the glasses. "They work like a charm," I tell her, repeating her words. She takes them off and glances behind her. A few fans are left, tapping their feet, holding their books.
"I've been commandeering your time. I should get out of here."
"Wait, I'm almost done." "Want to grab that cup of coffee in 15 minutes? I ask, then quickly add, "As payment for your rescue services."
"Hmm. Is there any place in this city to get coffee? She taps her chin, as if truly considering it. I sigh heavily, playing along. Good point. It is really hard to find coffee. It's not as if it's on every corner or anything. She nods in understanding. Usually you have to hunt for it far and wide. It can take a few hours. She snaps her fingers. Tell you what, let me see what I can accomplish with a map. If I can find a cup of coffee within, say, a 50-foot radius of the store, I'll text you the location. 10-4. She salutes me and spins on her heel, and I swear I don't watch her too intently as she weaves through the bookstore on her way out. Okay, fine. Maybe I do spend 3 or 4 seconds checking out her backside. 5 seconds tops. But it's a spectacular ass, so it seems a shame not to enjoy the view. Serena returns, parks herself next to me at the table, and for the next 15 minutes I focus on my fans, signing and chatting, interacting, and engaging. When the event ends, I check for a text from Harper, and am stoked to find one. I tap out a reply, then help Serena straighten up. A straight shooter, she started working on my show a couple years ago, before it climbed high in the ratings. You did good, sweetie. Sorry I was MIA for some of it, she says, twisting her curly black hair into a clip before she stands and scoops the Sharpies into her purse. She pats her belly. I swear, for a few minutes I thought I was going to have the baby in the bookstore bathroom. Funny, I'd been worried about the same thing. If you did, you would have named the baby after me, right? No, if I had the baby in the bathroom, I was going to name it Sink, she says, then holds up her finger. Oh, I almost forgot to tell you. That's how she always prefaces requests from the head of the network. There's an event Gino wants you to be at on Thursday. It's just a little charity fundraiser schmooze at a bowling alley. But he wants all his homegrown stars there. Of course I'll be there, I say, grabbing my jacket. I mean, what other answer is there? Paranoid prick or not, Gino controls the time slots on the network. And he likes me to remember he handpicked my online strip to turn into an animated show a few years back when he was in the development division. I'm grateful as all hell that he gave me a shot, but he's strangely jealous too. And I suspect it's because he created a show years ago that faded from the limelight quickly, and none of his efforts to craft another one of his own panned out. And you know the drill, she says, and she zips up her purse, and we wander through the shelves, heading for the exit. I recite the rules. Gino wants me to be charming, but not so charming that women hit on me instead of him, and I should be awesome at bowling if I'm on his team, and if not, I should throw the game so he wins. Because if I don't play his games, the greater the chance I'll get screwed in negotiations in a couple more weeks, since contract talks are at the end of this month. She taps her finger to her nose. Perfecto. It's almost as if I'm used to his completely mercurial personality. She smiles. That's our boss. You know he was used to being the center of attention till you came around. You're the full package, and it drives him crazy. But I really appreciate you doing these public events. I glance around the bookstore, filled with customers, some of whom just bought my cartoon collection. I've been asked to go bowling with a TV executive who is a crazy, capricious ass, but who signs my fat paycheck. My show is killing it. I'm raking in the money and the praise, and I do very well with the ladies. There's something that they like about the scruff, ink, glasses, and hair, and the fact that my once lanky frame is packed with toned, strong muscles. Life is good. Serena, I assure you, it's not like attending a party is some hardship. The fact that the head of the network has some weird complex about me is the very definition of a first-world problem. No, she says sharply as we reach the front door of the bookstore. You know what a true first-world problem is? The other day I went to Ben and Jerry's and got a pint to take home. I wanted two flavors, coconut 7-layer bar for me and mango sorbet for my hubby. But guess what? I hold a hand to my forehead like a fortune teller. They didn't have coconut 7-layer bar. Worse, she says, slamming her hand onto my chest and practically toppling me into the new release shelves with her exuberance. They forgot to put a sheet of wax paper between them to separate the flavors. The mango leaked into the coconut, she says with a pout. I frown. That's really terrible. I kind of wish I never knew such a horrific thing happened. I'm not sure I can get that image out of my head. On that note, I say goodbye to Serena and head to Piece of Cake, where Harper waves to me from a table in the back. She's reading my book. Is it wrong that I wish she still had those glasses on? But glasses or no glasses, she just does it for me. Chapter 3. We share a piece of double chocolate cake. I know how this looks, like a date, but it's not. It's just that the slices here at this cake/coffee shop are huge. No way can you eat one all by yourself unless you were born with two dessert compartments. I love dessert, but I only have one. Besides, it's not like that between us. I've known Harper for what seems like forever, since I've been best friends with Spencer for that long. The three of us went to the same high school, but Harper is 3 years younger than me, so it's not like I was doing the left-hand shuffle to thoughts of her when I was a senior and she was a freshman. I'd never thought of her that way then. Besides, I'm right-handed. Anyway, now that we're both in our late 20s and living in New York City, we hang out from time to time. Maybe even more so since Spencer got engaged. He's much less available these days. Sometimes Harper and I go to the movies on weekends, and lately, sitting next to her in the theater is the definition of distracting. Let's just be blunt here. Harper is not cheerleader hot. She's not Victoria's Secret hot. She's quirky hot, nerd hot, video gamer fantasy hot. She does kickboxing for workouts. She competes hard in our summer softball games, and she knows what house she'd be in at Hogwarts. She's a Hufflepuff, and yes, it turns me on that she didn't pick Ravenclaw or Gryffindor like everyone else usually does, but she chooses the house known for loyalty. And she's a fucking magician, for a living. The chick pays her own bills performing sleight of hand and slipping the wool over people's eyes. That's kind of the hottest profession ever. Hotter than bartender, then model, then rock star. Maybe not hotter than sexy librarian, though. I honestly didn't think these thoughts until a few months ago. Until the day last summer, when she asked me to help her get even with her brother for something he did to her years ago. To exact her revenge, we pretended we were getting it on at softball practice. I took off my shirt, she ran her hands down my chest, and the rest is history. The 99.99% of my brain started going there with her that day in Central Park. Look, I'm a guy. It is that simple. We're not complicated, and anyone who tries to make us out to be complex is full of shit. That's not to say we aren't capable of advanced feelings, emotions, and all that jazz. But when it comes to women, it doesn't take much for the light bulb to go on or off. And the Harper switch went all the way on that day. I do my best to focus on idle chit-chat with her, rather than cycling through what kind of lingerie she might be wearing, especially since I can see a hint of a black satiny strap at the edge of her V-neck sweater. I force myself not to imagine what the rest of that sexy garment looks like. Too late. I'm picturing it now, seeing in my mind how the lace hugs her flesh, and that is one fine image. Thank you, brain, for never being afraid to go there. But now I need to zone in on the conversation. I point at the cake we're working on. Scale of 1 to 10, what would you give this cake? With her fork poised midair, she stares at the ceiling.
Rapture.
I don't believe that's on the scale. I did say cake was a religion. Then I would think second coming would be fitting.
Coming. You said coming,
she says with a straight face. I say that a lot, actually. I lean back in the chair, keeping it casual.
I know. She wiggles her eyebrows, then whispers, I was enjoying your book before you arrived. It's so dirty.
She says it like this is a secret, like she just learned for the very first time that my cartoon is a fiesta of naughtiness. What I really want to know, Nick Hammer, she says, owning my name in a way that the blonde from the bookstore could never even come close to, is where your inspiration comes from.
You don't even want to know, Harper. I pretend to study the cake. I think this cake might be laced with something. She takes a bite and winks. Yeah, deliciousness. That's what it's spiked with. Fuck, see what I mean? She's too much. She makes it really hard not to think about what she'd be like in bed. She operates at this constant state of verbal banter that's flirting, but not quite flirting. The net effect? I'm a cat, and she's working the laser pointer. I'm chasing the red light, but I can't ever catch it. The fact that I'm single doesn't help. I have nothing whatsoever against one-night stands, but I'm less of a hookup guy and more of a serial monogamist. Even though I've never fallen in love with anyone I've monogamied serially with, including the last woman, who's in Italy now, working on a book. Ergo, I'm 100% available. I'm absolutely interested in the woman sitting across from me, but no way can I have her. I take a drink of my coffee and she reaches for her hot chocolate. Since I can't spend the entire time staring at her lips on the mug, I look around. The shelves at the counter are full of fantastic-looking cakes, and a chalkboard menu lists mouth-watering flavors alongside the standard coffee options. Piece of cake is packed. The wooden tables are nearly overflowing with your Upper West Side potpourri of people, moms, dads, and young kids, along with 20-somethings and couples.
So how many was it?
Harper nods in the direction of the bookstore. How many what? Books sold? She shakes her head.
How many times did you get hit on in there?
I laugh, but don't answer her.
Come on, she presses, tapping the table. A good-looking guy like you, the center of attention,
it must have been what, every other fan? My ears pick up at her description. Other parts do, too. But see, it's not like she says good-looking guy in this come-on way. She says it like it's some known fact, which is why I can't figure her out. I have no clue if her mind swerved out of Friendshipville and into Naughty Thought Town that day in the park, too. No, not every other fan, I say. But every other fan, she asks, and I laugh again at her word choice, as if every other is now a thing. All I'm going to say is you were an excellent shield when I needed you. I snap my fingers. Hey, I have an idea. I have this event in a couple days. I give her the details that Serena shared with me and fill her in on my boss's weird jealousy issues. But Gino still wants me to go, so you should come with me. As a shield? So women won't hit on you? She asks, taking another bite of the cake. They generally don't if you're there with a friend. She gestures with her fork from her to me and back.
Am I supposed to pretend it's a date?
She says this like it's the craziest notion in the world, which tells me I need to stop entertaining any thoughts of Harper Holliday running her hands down my chest ever again. It's not like she needs to know I drew a picture of her O face a few weeks ago. What? Was that so wrong? It's what I do for a living. It's not that weird. Besides, I deleted the file. I was just messing around on the computer, I swear. Like Spencer and Charlotte pretended, she adds, as if I could forget their ruse, especially since it worked out in its own way. Their wedding is in 2 weeks. No, that'd be lame if we did the same thing, I say, digging into the chocolate for another bite. That would be like if a romance writer used the same trope in the very next novel. That skeptical eyebrow of hers pops back up.
How do you know about tropes?
I write a show. Draw and write, but you get the idea.
Yours is an animated spoof of a dirty superhero, and yet you're that familiar with tropes in romance novels?
I dated a romance writer a few months ago.
What was that like?
It was like dating, I deadpan. She rolls her eyes.
No, did she want to practice with you?
I laugh, loving her boldness and asking, "You mean the scenes, Harper?" She nods as she takes another drink. I nod too. She did.
"Did you?"
she asks, curiosity dipping from her tone as she sets down her mug. "Yeah."
"Wow." "When you read her book, was it like seeing your life exposed?"
"That one hasn't come out yet. It's next, I think."
"What happened to her?"
It ended, I say with a shrug. I'm not upset about it. We had a good time for the few months we were together.
Why?
Because it was fun, nothing more, and because Jay Cameron, that's her pen name, is obsessed with her work. Fiction is her world. That, and she took off for Italy. She went to Florence. I think her next book is set there, I tell Harper. And I'll be looking forward to reading the one that you, she sketches air quotes, helped her research. Maybe I'll never tell you her pen name. I'll get it out of you, she says, as I take a drink of my coffee. Does she write those cheesy sex scenes where the guy tells the girl he loves her while he's inside her, or right after? I nearly spit out my drink from laughing. Gee, I really don't know how cheesy the scenes get. I don't read romance novels. Maybe you should. Some are pretty hot, she says, with a knowing glint in her eyes, before she steers back to the matter at hand. So the event. Let me get this straight. You want me to be your wing woman to help you with your boss, who's such a douche he can't handle that you're manlier than he is, and because you attract the ladies like a tomcat does the pussycats in Heat? Ah, hell. I wish she wouldn't use that word in such close proximity to the factory of dirty thoughts inside my skull. I wouldn't say that's true. Harper points in the direction of the store. Judging from how badly that woman at the store wanted to hop on Pop, I'm guessing you get hit on all the time, she says. And I would sound like a completely cocky bastard if I told the truth. Yes, it does happen a fuck ton, but it wasn't always like today. With success comes more interest from women, and more interest not just in me, but in my assets. I'm referring to the green ones, not the ones made of flesh and bone, but they like those too. I give a one-shouldered shrug by way of an answer. She smiles. I'll go, Nick. And then when I need something, I'll call in a favor from you. Deal? Works for me. She reaches for the cake, dips her finger in the frosting, and brings it to her mouth, licking it off. Oh, God. Oh, hell. Why does she torture me like this? Thank fuck I'm sitting down. She does not need to know she is one half of the ingredients in my instant hard-on mix these days. Just add an unintentional sexy vixen comment that I don't know how to read, and it's like a pop-up shop.
Look! It's Anna the Amazing!
Harper snaps her head in the direction of the young voice calling out her stage name. She doesn't use her real name with the kids' parties, she does. To them, she's Anna the Amazing Magician. She says it's easier to maintain a Facebook profile with her college friends if she doesn't tie her work to it. A huge smile spreads across her face, and she jumps out of her chair, bends down, and says hello to a girl with wild brown hair and a spray of freckles across her nose. Harper places her index finger on her lips and whispers, "Close your eyes." The little girl does as asked. And when Harper tells her to open her eyes 2 seconds later, she removes a carefully folded up dollar bill from behind the kid's ear. Her jaw drops. Spoiler alert, Harper took the bill from her pocket when the girl's eyes were closed.
But wait,
Harper says in her magician's voice, and then her left hand sweeps behind the girl's other ear, and she's got another bill, this one folded like a paper airplane. Okay, I have no clue how she pulled off that one.
You're amazing, the kid says in awe, then looks up at her dad, and Harper's eyes follow suit.
The dad is tall and sturdy, and I have a suspicion that if he's single, which the lack of a ring says he might be, he's scoring regularly. No, I don't find him attractive because I don't find dudes attractive. You can just tell someone is good-looking when he's a ringer for Chris Hemsworth. Harper stands and wobbles. She reaches out her hand, steadying herself at our table.
Ha ha, ooh, ooh,
what the? I sit up straighter, my curiosity piqued, as Harper attempts to speak a new language. Oh, wait. She's just failing at saying hi. Hi, Anna, the guy says, then lowers his voice and whispers like her real name is their special secret. Harper. And it sure sounds as if he enjoys saying her name. Shit. The Hemsworth ringer likes her. Harper opens her mouth again. Something that sounds like,
"Hiya, Simon,"
comes out of those pretty lips. How are you? This place is great, isn't it? he asks. I think, but I can't be certain, that she says yes, or it could be yesh, given her sudden fit of I can't remember a fucking word of the English language. Hayden is so excited for her party in 3 weeks. She's counting down, and she's still talking about the tricks you did at Carly's 5th birthday last month. Harper turns her attention back to Hayden. You had a good time, didn't you? Did you like it when I guessed your secret card, or maybe when I was about to levitate? She asks, and her speech has completely returned to normal when she talks to the child. I love the secret card. Yes, I want that at my party. You will get all the good stuff. Simon glances in my direction, then clears his throat. He gives me a quick guy wave, and Harper blushes and says, Oh, this is my friend, Mr. Orgasm. Silence. It just descends on the whole joint, like someone shattered a glass, and we all have to stare at the wreckage on the floor. It is a certified train wreck watching Harper talk to this guy. It's horrifying and awesome at the same time. She brings her hand to her mouth, then pinches the bridge of her nose as her face turns red. Simon laughs at her faux pas, and Hayden just giggles at the scene, maybe because she finds it funny to see Harper turn the shade of a fire engine. I'm ready to grab a bucket of popcorn and keep watching this show, because it is fascinating that Harper has no clue how to interact with a guy who likes her.
I mean, Nick,
she squeaks out.
This is Nick. I saved him from Vicious.
Simon arches a brow. Vicious? I stand up. Scary dude who heads up an underground fight club. Or maybe it's a biker gang these days. Either way, he was terrifying, I say with a shudder, then extend a hand. Nick Hammer, nice to meet you. Simon, he says. And this is my daughter Hayden. I say hello to his kid. Harper hooks her thumb in my direction as she looks at Simon. Speech seems to have returned to nearly normal levels. He's my brother's best friend, which means he's totally off limits.
Ah.
The plot thickens. Harper really likes this guy since she's letting him know she's available. Good to know, Simon says with a smile. I'll give you a call and maybe we can get together and prep for the party. Talk about the tricks and whatnot. After an awkward goodbye, Simon takes his daughter to the only free table on the opposite side of the shop. I stare at Harper pointedly. I can't resist. I have to poke at this. Besides, it'll help me get my mind off the thought of her naked. You like him, don't you? She sighs dejectedly.
Is it that obvious?
She whispers. No, I say gently. I mean, relatively speaking. It's not like you were holding up a sign that said, I like you so much. She lowers her head.
Ugh, I am such a...
But she doesn't finish the sentence, because the parade of mortification launches an encore as Harper drops her forehead into her palm, which causes her elbow to slide on the table, which sends her hot chocolate on a fast track for... me. And yep, 3 seconds later, my favorite faded gray t-shirt with Hobbs on it is covered in lukewarm milk and the dregs of whipped cream.
Shoot me now, she groans, as she rests her cheek on the table and mimes pulling a trigger.
Good thing it's laundry day, I say, and I'm thinking, there has got to be a storyline somewhere in this where Mr. Orgasm saves the day. She lifts her face. Are you really sure you want me to go anywhere with you? I give an exaggerated nod and tug at my hot chocolate-stained t-shirt. You pretty much just sealed the deal on being my sidekick, Princess Awkward. Chapter 4 Harper swings her right arm behind her, arcs it in front, then launches the 9-pound flaming pink neon ball. In a glorious, straight line, the ball speeds down the lane, which illuminates with flashing silver lights, and I hold my breath until it smacks 3 pins. I hate to do this, but I silently send a prayer that the damage ends there. Only it doesn't. 2 more pins wobble, and then surrender. I cross my fingers that the others don't give in. No such luck. 3 more topple, then one of those pins clobbers the final pair.
and they all fall down. Harper thrusts her arms high and punches the air with a fist. Her second strike of the night, along with a spare. Shit, shit, shit. My team is dangerously close to beating Gino's. I sneak a look at him. His arms are crossed, his lips form a ruler-thin line, and his eyes are nearly slits. Perched on the orange plastic chair by the scoring screen, he glares at me briefly, as if it's all my fault for letting her nab a strike. Serena appears, and he smiles brightly as she drops a hand to his shoulder and whispers something to him, probably reminding him to say cheese for the company photographer, since they're going to post those pics on the Comedy Nation Instagram feed. I turn my focus back to Harper. Her blue eyes are lit up and sparkling, and she's on some kind of high. She heads toward me at the ball return. It should not surprise me that she can bowl like a champion. I bet she kicks ass at pool, too. Probably nails the bullseye in darts every time. Hell, she can likely change a tire without any help. Now, there's a hell of a hot image. Ah, fuck. Bad idea to speculate on her auto repair skills, because as she struts toward me, I'm mentally drawing a picture of Harper as a hot, red-headed mechanic wearing Daisy Dukes and a wife-beater tank stretched over her chest, sexy streaks of grease on her legs. I don't know why, but women are required to wear Daisy Dukes in any chick auto mechanic fantasies. It's part of the guy rule book, and you cannot deviate from it. Not that I'd want to. It exists for a reason. It's hot as sin. "Did you see that?" she asks, beaming as she throws her arms around me to celebrate, and I swat away my out-of-nowhere fantasy so that it's not completely obvious that I'm getting a hard-on for her right now. But really, she'd look so fucking good working on my engine. The ironic thing is, I don't even have a car. "You didn't tell me you bowled a 300, I whisper out of the side of my mouth as I reciprocate, wrapping her in my arms too. Because, well, she started it, and she feels fantastic all snug against me like this. "Nah, I'm not that good," she says as we separate, snuffing that short-lived moment. I give her a side-eye stare as she peers into the machine that chugs and cranks up bowling balls from the lanes. "That was your second strike of the night," I remind her. "You're a ringer. You kept that little fact to yourself." She shrugs playfully. "A girl's gotta have some secrets. And hell, do I want to know hers?" "That may be true," I say, then lower my voice even more, though it would be hard for anyone to hear a word above the Go-Go's tune that's blasting on the bowling alley sound system. "But if you keep killing it, I might as well be a dead man in negotiations." She claps her hand over her mouth. "Oh, shoot," she whispers through her fingers. "Are we that close to winning? I've been so busy being your Velcro, I nearly forgot." She raises her eyes the slightest bit to a tiny brunette parked next to Gino. Her name is Francie. She works in promotions, and she's wearing a crotch-length skirt, as she usually does. When I first arrived tonight, she sauntered over to me, then quickly turned the other way when she spotted Harper by my side. Now she's making the moves on Gino, which is perfect, since he'll think he beat me in that regard, too. But little does he know, I'm having the last laugh. A few months ago, Francie tried to find me on Tinder. Turns out she found my brother Wyatt instead, since I'm not on Tinder. Wyatt's a carpenter turned big-time contractor with a business that's growing like crazy, and apparently she was quite pleased with his tools. Or so he told me. I told him that was TMI, but TMI pretty much describes my brother. As the machine spits up the ball, I grab it for Harper, bring it to my chest, and wrap my hands around it. I drop my voice. "I hate to ask, but I need you to throw the next frame." Her shoulders sag. "Really?" "He's going to go crazy if we crush him. He wants his team to win and raise the most money for charity. He wants his picture to be the one they send to all the trade mags." She sighs heavily. "Throw it like the 1919 World Series?" I nod. "Do it just like the White Sox did." She frowns. "This pains me." I know. "But drinks for life, and cake for life too, okay?" She nods resolutely, and reaches for the ball in my arms. For the briefest of moments, her fingers graze the fabric of my shirt, a casual button-down that's untucked and rolled up at the cuffs. Maybe I'm imagining things, but it feels like her fingers linger on my pecs longer than they need to. I do what any sane man would do, clutch the ball tighter so she'll have to move in closer. She does, and yes, her fingertips are definitely touching me. Good thing I can hold this ball for a very long time. All night long, if I'm lucky.
Nick,
she whispers in a plea, and it sounds so damn good, the way her voice goes feathery when she says my name. Instantly I hear that inflection, and all that follows in it, in my imagination.
More, harder, please, now, yes, yes, yes.
May I have the ball, please? It's the only way I can fuck up the next turn. I blink and hand it over to her. I lean against the ball machine and watch as she heads to her spot, brings the ball to her chest, and pistons her arm behind her. She takes a few fast steps before releasing it. I tense because she looks just as polished as she did when she nailed that strike. But the girl is good. Her arm swings the slightest bit wider, and the pink orb rolls straight for a second, then veers, and soon acquaints itself with the gutter. I utter a silent yes, even though it's a damn shame to ask her to blow the game. I have no doubt she'd rack up even more points and look spectacular doing so. She is a sight to behold tonight, in her dark blue skinny jeans, a purple and green argyle sweater, and white and red bowling shoes. Her hair is pinned up in a twist, all those silky red strands piled high on her head. Her neck is long and elegant. And I've got this feeling her skin tastes spectacular there and everywhere. I wonder if she'd enjoy soft, lingering kisses along her neck, across the column of her throat, up to her ear. Whether she'd moan and sigh and lean into me, her body asking for more. I decide she'd love it because I'd kiss her so damn well she'd melt into me. She'd want so much more, and I'd give it to her, making her feel good in every fucking way, driving her wild. I'd lick a path between her tits, down her belly to the button on those jeans. One fast flick, and they'd be undone. I'd have them off her in less than 2 seconds, my nimble fingers tugging her panties down. She turns and snaps in an "ah shucks" gesture. And I shut down the very vivid, very arousing, very promising fantasy faster than you can clear the history on your internet browser. She wanders back to me, looking appropriately forlorn. Gino smiles, a slick grin that continues as his team goes on to win thanks to Harper blowing the final few frames. The photographer he hired snaps a shot of Gino, with his curly hair, dark eyes, and broad frame, as he ambles toward me. "Nice game, Nick," he says, all slick and faux-friendly. "Better luck next time." He punches my shoulder in an old buddy, old pal move. "But hey, at least you're good at writing the shows." "Let's just hope I write better than I bowl," I say, serving it right up to him the way he likes it, with a side dish of suck-up. He laughs loudly, like a gorilla. Then Gino notices Harper a few feet away, checking her phone in her purse. Redheads, he says, as if he's sucking a piece of meat off the bone. They're fiery and feisty. Involuntarily, I clench my fists, but before I can say, "Shut up, you ape," Harper spins around and flashes us both her gorgeous smile. It's pure magic. It's what woos the kids and wins the hearts of the parents who book her months out for the parties. It's wide, charismatic, and totally stunning.
"Well, hello there. You played a very good game," Gino says, extending his hand.
She shakes it, and I make a mental note to remind her to wash her hands thoroughly when we leave. Maybe even use hand sanitizer a few times. Fuck, the way he grips her hand, we're going to need a full decontamination chamber here.
"Thank you so much, but honestly, you're just so fantastic," she says to him, an adoring look in her eyes. "Quite a tenacious competitor."
I could kiss her for this.
"Oh, you flatter me," he says, waving a hand.
"I assure you, it's not flattery when someone rocks the lanes like you do," she says, then gives a sexy little jut of her shoulder. And that's the money shot, folks. Gino is eating out of the palm of her hand. He turns to me and hooks his thumb at Harper. I like her hammer. She's a keeper. She definitely is, I second. When we leave, she grabs my arm and squeezes my bicep. My arms are strong. That's not me being conceited. They really are, courtesy of my devotion to exercise and perhaps my addiction to the benefits it reaps. Her hand curls over my left arm, and yep, the hours at the gym are worth it right now. Was I obsequious enough? Like you have a master's degree in it. She wiggles her eyebrows as we pass the vending machine on the way to the shoe counter. She gives another squeeze. By the way, nice arms. Then she lets go, and I'm tempted to stop at the machine, buy a Cracker Jack box, and hunt for a decoder ring at the bottom. Something to decipher what the hell she means with these half-flirting, half-not remarks. Was nice arms a compliment or just a general observation? Did it mean she wanted to run her fingernails along them as I braced myself above her? Or that she thought I could be useful for, say, lifting a heavy coffee table in her apartment? She practically skips ahead of me to the counter. Don't forget you owe me a game now too, Nick Hammer. I want a rematch with you. You're on, I say, because at least rematch means more, and that's what I want most. She bends to unlace her shoes, and when she stands, she slaps them on the counter. Oh, hey, she says, and her face lights up. Harper Holiday! The guy behind the counter clearly knows her. He's got dark hair, straight teeth, and brown eyes that he can't take off Harper. Christ, is there any man in Manhattan who doesn't want her? Hey, Jason, how are you? I haven't seen you since... Senior year, he supplies with a smile, as he takes the shoes. This is my friend Nick, she says, and squeezes my arm again. He went to Carleton Prep, too, but he was a senior when we were freshmen. Hey, man, I remember you. You were always drawing comics, hunched over a notebook, he says, with a grin as he hands me my chucks. That's me, I say, and I hope he leaves it at that. Not that I hated high school, not by any stretch, 'cause I'm just not a hater. And honestly, being the quiet guy was not the worst fate. I had plenty of friends, but I was completely a cipher when it came to girls. Your shit was good, he adds, and I straighten my shoulders and tell him thanks. This guy isn't so bad after all. I had no idea you worked here, Harper says. He holds out his hands and gestures around. All the time. This is my place. My little patch of land. No kidding. You run Neon Lanes? She asks, sounding thoroughly impressed as she slips on the pair of short boots he's handed her, and I finish lacing my shoes. Own and operate, he taps the counter. I do a little bit of everything. Be sure to say hi next time you're here. And hey, are you on Facebook? I am. Look me up. Friend me. Let's catch up, he says. As we walk away, I stare at her. You do realize he likes you. What? She asks, like I've just told her monkeys live on Jupiter. Yes, he likes you. You're crazy, she says, shaking her head. You're a trip, Harper. You have no clue sometimes. It's fucking adorable, I tell her, and then, because we came as friends and we're leaving as friends, but in case any of these other assholes who want her might be watching, I drape an arm around her. Seriously, Nick, why do you say that? I tug her closer, and she goes with it, letting me. Princess Clueless, you're about to get an education in all the things you're oblivious to. Chapter 5. We grab two stools at Speakeasy, a kick-ass spot in Midtown. The bartender, Julia, slides us two coasters and takes our order. Julia's married to the guy who owns the law firm I use for all my contracts. Clay Nichols runs the shop and is pretty much Manhattan's most fearless entertainment lawyer. His cousin Tyler joined him recently. He's a beast, too, and absolutely the guy I want having to deal with Gino for me. Julia pours me an imperial stout and then mixes the drink Harper ordered, which is made with tequila and lemon soda.
And one long-distance lover for your friend coming up, she says with a wink to us both, as I give her my credit card. Julia shakes her head, sliding the plastic back to me. Your money's no good here, handsome. Please, I insist.